Welcome to Weigh In Sports Talk. Today is Sunday, December 16th. Before we get started, here are a few reminders. We would love to hear from you, and here are several ways to weigh in. Call us at 646-716-5564, or join us in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/Tarvino, or follow us on Twitter at Weigh In Sports. Now here's your host, Brian Tarvin, and co-host Trey Patterson. Let's weigh in.
Well, thank you, Michelle, for the introduction. And like she said, welcome to Weigh In Sports Talk. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in tonight. We have a lot of information to cover, and hopefully we'll have a lot of fun doing it. And I'm going to bring on my co-host, Trey Patterson. Trey, how's everything, buddy?
Hey, good night, man. How's it going?
Doing good. Sunday night, getting close to Christmas. A lot of great football today and over the weekend. So I hope you got a chance to watch every bit of it today like I did.
I always catch some of it.
Oh, man. The San Francisco 49ers and Patriots are playing now. Surprisingly, San Francisco's up 7-0 in the first quarter, just faked a punt. Got it. And San Francisco's in scoring position. Trey, are you surprised?
No, I mean, I think this game is going to be very competitive. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a blowout by any means. I don't expect this to be a 50-0. I think the 49ers are a good football team. They're going to be able to hang with the Patriots for a little bit of time at least.
Yeah, and before we get started, Trey, I want to take a moment of silence for the victims in Connecticut, the sad tragedy with all of those children dying and the teacher, the principal, and just, I mean, it's just the worst, one of the worst things I've ever seen or, been a part of in my life to be able to watch this on TV. So let's just take a second moment of silence. All right. Well, I mean, it's just the worst news I've ever heard, Trey. I mean, it was the worst thing that probably everybody in this country that was watching TV from Friday now is feeling that same feeling in their stomach, just sickness.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the second worst, death comes down to, other than the Virginia Tech massacre. Not much to say that hasn't been said already, but, there's a lot of social commentary that we can make on this whole thing, but for the stick to sports, but very sad, very just horrified at those who are being affected right now in Connecticut or throughout the country.
Yeah, and, this is our fantasy world here. I mean, we get sports, we have fun, but what happened there is real life. And sports is fun, and it's fantasy, and it's our escape. But, I mean, the hurt those parents are going through and the families, I mean, it just weighs heavy on me, and I have no idea who those people are. So it's got to be hard on them, but we'll keep them in our prayers, and hopefully something good can come out of all of this negative. All right, Trey, turning into the football world today, Mr. Adrian Peterson. I believe, last week you said Peterson barely would get 100 yards, correct?
I said I'd be 100 to 125 yards, and that was about 100 yards off, it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but you'd have been right on if it wasn't for that big run, the 82-yard touchdown run, so.
Yeah,
Adrian Peterson, what a magical season, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but do you remember seeing a season from a running back this magical in a long time? I mean, it's just amazing what he's able to accomplish, and look at Minnesota right in the playoff picture now.
Yeah, it's been a while since we had a 2,000-yard rusher. I mean, there's a couple backs I can think of who hit it and approached it during our lifetime, but, but it's not an every season – it's not every season scenario that you see a rusher like Adrian Peterson light up the world like he's doing. So you got to give a lot of props to what Adrian Peterson's done. I think what makes it more impressive, Tarvin, for me, is that he's coming off major surgery. I mean, that to me is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, just think where he was this time last year. I mean, it was crazy. And now, honestly, Trey, do you think he's going to break Eric Dickerson's record?
I don't know. I mean, I know he's gunning for it, which makes me think that, he has a shot. And it's still, statistically, it's still got a long way to go. I just got to be surprised at how how teams are playing defense against the Vikings. I mean, you know the only threat they have is Adrian Peterson. And so it's just kind of surprising how much people are still allowing him to get outside the box. I mean, a lot of it's obviously his efforts, Tarvin, but, I mean, there's a lot of it that, you know, people could sell out for the run. And I know that I saw some plays today, which, you know, I was questioning the defensive mindset at the time. They seem to be playing the pass a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Rams, though, Trey. You have to remember, they're not the smartest team out there. So, hey, we're going to bring on Jason real quick. Jason, congratulations on your big win today.
Yeah, what's up, guys?
Hey,
how's it going?
Hey, it's going. You know, I'll just reemphasize, Ponder still sucks. So, you know, they win on Adrian's legs. That's about it. Trey, you said, you know, how did they let him run that much? You know, a lot of it has to do with offensive line. I mean, they got a good offensive line. And Peterson pretty much runs over people. So once he breaks through that line, man, he's gone. So you get a little hole, he'll exploit it. That last TD run, if you pay attention from the reverse angle of him running towards you, he looks like a man possessed when he runs. So do I think he'll break Dickerson's record? He'll come close. I can see him rushing for 350 yards in the next two games and breaking it, but for me, I'd rather make the playoffs, period. So,
Hey, Jason, I'm not sure. Is this a contract year for Peterson?
No, it's not.
Okay.
Peterson ain't going anywhere. I mean, there isn't any rumblings. I'm going to pay more attention to what they do in the draft this year. I'm kind of torn, you know. I kind of want to make the playoffs, but I kind of don't. But then again, I think this is going to be a weak draft. It's going to be a defensive draft, so it doesn't benefit us. So I say make the playoffs. Go shop for a quarterback. But Ponder won't be there next year. I'd start Webb instead of him. So we're a running team right now. We're one-dimensional, so it's amazing we're winning, just like Trey said. So.
Yeah, it is. That is an amazing thing, you went in and being able to just run the football like that, Jason. But, man, thanks for the call, buddy. And press one when we hit off, when we go off, and then hit number one if you want to come back on. But I appreciate the call.
No problem, man. Go Vikes, go Gophers.
All righty. Speaking of the Gophers, we will be talking about their bowl game in the next few minutes. So, Trey, man, I'm so excited to start talking about these games right now. And Jonathan Miklos is in the chat room, and I think he called me crazy for picking the Saints to beat the Bucs, didn't he?
Well, I don't really remember talking about that game.
Okay, well, I made it up then in my own head. I'm sorry, Trey. You know me. But,
well, I mean, we may have talked about it. I just don't recall. That's not one of our games. I don't remember bringing that one up. So if I could be wrong on that one.
Well, I want to let everybody know that we're on mtrmedia.com tonight, going live. Everything's sounding good over there. So we're on blogtalkradio.com and mtrmedia, Trey. We're growing.
Yeah, you know, thanks to those guys for getting us out there and getting us on the radio there as well. And another good opportunity for us to reach even more listeners and have more people call in and weigh in.
Exactly. So let me go ahead and give you the call-in number. It's 646-716-5564. 646-716-5564. Join us in the chat room. We're going to have a good time in here tonight, as always. We're starting to fill in some of our regulars. Welcome Andrew Tonge in the chat room, Corey Bird, Jonathan Miklos, Sonia Minson, Trey Patterson, and Jason Minson. So it'll keep be filling up. And Trey, let's go ahead and talk about some Major League Baseball real quick. A lot of moves going on this weekend, surprisingly. Tell us about them.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that we saw this week, which has got to be very surprising, is obviously Josh Hamilton going to the Angels. I mean, this move wasn't really – it was whispers. I mean, he met with the Angels over the winter meeting, so we knew they had met. But there really wasn't much more in the way of talk until literally the week this happened. So, you know, Tarvin, this move is surprising. And, you know, the Angels just seem to have almost a limitless pocketbook all of a sudden. I mean, Pujols last year, you know, and C.J. Wilson – now they have you know, Josh Hamilton, this is only the second time that a guy has 40 home runs and 120 RBIs and has changed teams. And the last one was the Texas Rangers as well. So they seem to lose these guys a lot. I mean, his last one was A-Rod, who went away. So, you know, it's very interesting, Carvin, that, you know, that Josh Hamilton chose to go with the Angels. I think he felt like Texas, in the interview I saw recently, that they, you know, put him on the back burner. And, you know, he took the mindset of, that, you know, well, I shouldn't be on the back burner for you guys. I should be the number one guy.
Tell me how the Angels go about not repeating the disaster they had last season. I mean, adding Hamilton, is that enough to get them over the hump?
Well, I mean, here's the thing about this whole move is, you got to remember, there have been a lot of teams recently who have went out and on paper done a lot of things that look really good. I mean, last year, if you look at the Yankees going into the season, you have a tough time, you know, telling me at the end of the season where they ended up and justifying that. And the Angels are going to be in that position as well, the Dodgers going in this year. So can they mess it up? Absolutely, Tarvin. I mean, injuries can happen. I mean, Josh Hamilton is a guy who's had some injuries. You know, Albert Pujols took a little bit of a slip last year. You know, you still don't know if they're going to trade. Are they going to trade Trumbo? Are they going to trade Morales? How that may affect the team. So there are things that this team isn't perfect. I mean, they can lose a lot of games if, you know, things go wrong. But, I mean, certainly on paper, they look like the AL champions right now.
Yeah, I still think they need to get some more pitching, just because that's what wins games, really, but especially in the playoffs. But I think Pujols is going to come back with a great season. And, I mean, they have a loaded squad. And what do you think about Dickey leaving New York to go to Toronto?
Yeah, I saw this trade. I haven't seen all the details yet because it hasn't been fully announced. But the Mets have never really seemed very happy with R.A. Dickey. You know, won the Cy Young. If you looked at the numbers or the money they were offering him, I mean, you're talking about almost the money they were paying some middle relievers were getting almost per year. I mean, it was kind of ridiculous what they were offering Dickey. I mean, I understand his age. I mean, I understand all the economics in place, but, you know, they weren't giving him the market value in any way. And so, you know, he was still remaining loyal to him and still talking about, you know, pitching for him next year. So you got to kind of, you know, hopefully that he gets a good deal, because, I mean, certainly has earned it. I mean, it wasn't like he was a one-season wonder. If you look at his two seasons before that, I mean, he was a very quality pitcher. So, you know, R.A. Dickey and that knuckleball, I think, are still pretty valuable, even at an older age. And, you know, knuckleball pitchers usually last a little bit longer than most pitchers do. I mean, I don't know, Tarvin, how long did Phil Niekro pitch? Until he was, like, 70? I mean, it felt like he was out there for a long time.
82. I think he was 82 But, yeah, you're right. The ERAs of those guys, I mean, he can pitch count. I mean, it doesn't hurt the torque on your arm. It's not the same as throwing that curveball and just regular fastball. But, Trey, in the queue, we have Jonathan Miklos, our baseball guru. I'm going to bring him on real quick to see what he thinks about this. What's going on, Jonathan?
Hey, not much, man. I'm just glad to hear you all talk about some baseball, and I apologize if my voice sounds a little hoarse. I was just in a room full of Pittsburgh Steelers fans rubbing it in. So to get down to this Angel maneuver, Josh Hamilton will start in center and left field. Mike Trout will start in center field, and Vernon Wells. Here's the confusion in Los Angeles: is that you have Vernon Wells, you have Peter Bordros, you have Mark Trumbo, and you have Kenji Morales. And they have to be spread between right field and third base. Vernon Wells is the albatross that everybody wants to get rid of, but L.A. doesn't want to get rid of him for nothing. So they're trying to find a team. No matter what, L.A.'s going to have to eat their contracts. They're going to have to figure out a way to be happy with that. But that lineup looks dangerous. The pitching staff looks good. The bullpen looks weak. That will be a weakness in L.A. Now, to go to Toronto, here's the deal for R.A. Dickey. R.A. Dickey is being traded to the Toronto Blue Jays for Blue Jays catching prospect Travis D'Arnaud, who's supposed to be the best catching prospect in all of baseball right now, in all the minor leagues. They will also acquire John Buck, which, if you remember, they just got from the Florida Marlins. Class A right-hander Noah Snidergaard, who apparently he's trying to be a pretty good young pitcher. I have never heard his name before. And they will also send the Mets cash, while the Mets will send Josh Toll and R.A. Dickey to the Mets. This is all hinging, though, on a contract extension for at least 2 years, and with the ballpark figure being around $13 million a year. Now, now this trade by Toronto tells me that Toronto is selling out. They have just selling out everything. Their whole farm is gone, you know? Just gone.
Yeah, it's a win-now philosophy for them, for sure. I mean, they are absolutely looking at winning this year coming up. And I think they feel like this is their year to compete in the East. But Jonathan and Tarman, here's a move that I think the Angels, I'm hearing rumors about. And Jonathan, see what you think about this one. I'm hearing that all the players they may trade, it may be Kendry Morales and it may be to the Rays.
Let me debunk that three for you right now. No. The Rays want nothing to do with Kendry Morales because we have Longoria, and Morales is mainly a third baseman, and we just signed James Loney at first base. We're not looking to spend more money because we need to save money to sign David Price to an extension.
Well, Morales is a first baseman, not a third baseman.
Oh, well, the Angels website lists him as a third baseman, too.
Yeah, he played first base last year.
Right, well, you see, we just signed Loney at first.
Loney is terrible.
Yes, and so was Pena, but we still paid him $7.5
million. Yeah, but he hit the long ball for you, though. I mean, he can hit the long ball. Loney
he
has,
hit 19 home runs. Come on, Trey.
Well,
a 197 average and 19 home runs.
Loney hasn't hit 19 home runs in 4 years.
I'm fine with that, as long as he hits above 197. You know,
yeah.
I mean, we're just trying to save money for David Price. He's a Cy Young Award winner. We need the money for that. And we do have Will Myers and Patrick Leonard and Tim Beckham. We have some very good prospects in the minors that I'm kind of excited about, but not really. But well, it's a wait and see. The Rays are continuing to build. Toronto went from we're going to build our farm system to flip it. It was a very sly and very, very, very intelligent move by Alex Anthopoulos, the general manager of the Blue Jays, and also a Greek like me. So I am proud of my fellow Greek brother for fooling everybody in baseball.
Well, Jonathan, man, I appreciate the call, bud. Stay in the chat room, and we're about to get off baseball here and go to football. But the last thing I want to talk about, Trey, Kevin Youkilis could end up a Yankee after all of the crap he went through in Boston, leaving and then coming back to the Yankees. Is that a punch in the face to the Red Sox here?
Yeah, he turned down a 2-year deal with roughly the same amount of money. It was a little bit less, but it was a 2-year contract. I think he took this 1-year deal to basically do exactly as you're saying, is, hey, Red Sox, let me show you, I'm going to come back and I'm going to show you for the next year, you know, what you're really missing. But, you know, as good as this move is for the Yankees, I think the Red Sox actually made a better move, and that was picking up Victorino. That move didn't hardly get any press. And I think Victorino is going to have a much greater impact on these two clubs than the Youkilis will for the Yankees. Obviously, the Youkilis deal hurts a lot of fans. I think more than it will actually hurt the Red Sox this year.
Yeah, well, we will talk some baseball when the news comes up. Like Jonathan was happy we got to talk some baseball. So we'll always talk every major sport if it's worth talking about at the time. But, Trey, let's move on to football. You want to go ahead and start with the bowl games from yesterday?
Yeah, we'll talk about the first, the New Mexico Bowl. This actually had one of the greater finishes, if you watched this game, than it probably will have in the entire bowl season. I mean, Arizona was down a major, I mean, at the end of this game, and they seemed to be out of it. I mean, I was watching this game near the end, and I was like, why am I even watching this game? And then all of a sudden, Arizona did something, I think, that at least shocked me, Tarvin. They came back and actually got an onside kick and then took it down the field with less than a minute and won the game. And all of this while their guys were fighting on the sidelines earlier in the game, Tarvin. I mean, this game was crazy.
Yeah, I think being down 21-0, tempers started flaring on defense. And, you know, all of a sudden that sparked Arizona to come back. I mean, remember when I told you there'd be 200 points scored in this game? I think I was close.
yeah.
But, you know, the first quarter, 28 points was scored. Second quarter, 31. Third, 14. and fourth 24. I mean, God, I mean, neither team could tackle anything. I mean, this is the worst defenses I've ever seen in a bowl game, Trey, and to fist fight each other on the sidelines, I think you need to be taking that aggression out on the opposing team. But, man, I thought Arizona would win by more than 1 point. But, I mean, are you impressed with Nevada offense in this game? Or tell me what you looked at in this game that actually impressed you.
I think what impressed me is Nevada came out so well prepared. I like their game plan. So, I mean, you got to look at, you know, some of their coaching staff and you got to wonder, okay, maybe some of these guys are ready to move on up because, I mean, at least offensively, I mean, they came out with a really good game plan. I mean, they were doing everything they wanted to do on offense. Now, on the same respect, you know, the defense, you have to go, okay, well, this is Nevada's defense, and look what happened. They, you know, blew a big lead near the end, which they should have easily held on to. But, you know, I liked their game plan early on, Parvin. I like the adjustments that Arizona made at halftime. So Rich Rodriguez, good on him. In the locker room at halftime, I mean, Arizona came out a little bit better at the half and started playing much better football. Of course, the fourth quarter belonged to Arizona. But, I mean, obviously a crazy ending. I mean, you can't predict the fact that they're going to get an onside kick. It's so rare. But, you know, clearly, you know, Arizona and that fighting to the finish, I mean, that's a great building step for them towards the Pac-12 for next year, possibly. And, hey, and look, in the bigger picture, Tarvin, the bowl race, Arizona just gave the Pac-12 that first victory.
Yeah, I mean, but look, if you love defense, this game just, I mean, may irritated you. If you love defense and hard hitting, you don't want to watch this game. But, I mean, Rich Rodriguez said this was the biggest win of his career. I mean, really, your biggest win of your career is against Nevada in a November bowl game almost, really?
Yeah.
So, I mean, looking at it, Sonia mentioned in the chat room said the punishment for the players where they had to go home with their parents after the game. That's a stiff penalty.
Well, sometimes what mama does at home is much greater than what you could ever get from a coach. So I can attest to what may happen to me at home is always greater than what somebody in the field could give me.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was a kid playing sports and I did something wrong, I could always look up in the stands and see my mom giving me that look, and I knew what was going to happen when I got home. And trust me, I was very scared of what she could do. You have seven kids. You know how to beat somebody, right?
only in the best way.
Well, I mean, I mean, this game was just crazy, and then it took us to, you know, the Utah State game. I mean, this is exactly the way this game went exactly the way I thought, Trey.
Oh yeah, and this is how we called it. I mean, I think I said 23-3 or something like that. I mean, so the score was obviously much greater, but I mean, this game was dominated by Utah State's defense. I mean, they gave up some field goals, and that's about it. I mean, Utah State came out. Their rushing attack was much more impressive than I thought. I mean, wouldn't that guy have like 235 yards rushing? I mean, so
yep.
I was surprised that they had that kind of rushing attack even against the Toledo team. But, you know, I mean, Utah State did exactly what we thought they were going to do.
Let's talk a minute about this coach for Utah State. I mean, this guy has proven over the last few years he knows how to win. I mean, he knows how to take lesser talent and actually win, Trey. Why is Gary Anderson still a coach at Utah State?
You know, it's kind of funny. I have seen his name a couple times come up, but I think what I'm guessing he's thinking, and this is entirely speculation, is a lot of the things I'm seeing his name come up to me, I think he may think they're lateral moves. You know, I've seen his name pop up in some of the MAC jobs, and, you know, why would you jump from the Utah State to the MAC? I mean, you know, so maybe he's waiting out, and maybe he's waiting for the big boys to come calling from the SEC or the Pac-12 or the Big Ten or something, one of the big conferences to come calling, and maybe they're just not on his radar yet. But, you know, I mean, he seems like he's ready to take, you know, what could be a position in this school, Tarvin. I mean, he's put together a really good program at Utah State, which, I mean, Utah State, Tarvin, come on.
Yeah, it's Utah State. I mean, you know, there's Utah in that state. There's BYU, so you're not even close to the top two in that. So all of a sudden, you've turned this team into actually a serious team. I mean, this is their first bowl win since 1993, and that's a long time without a bowl win, Trey.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. But, you know, speaking of coaching moves, Tarvin, there's two of them I did want to bring up and see what you thought. Well, the first one is how it affects Texas A&M. That's Cliff Kingsbury, you know, the guy who put up all those yards at Texas Tech. He leaves the offensive coordinator job. I mean, this is a guy who basically put Johnny Manziel on the map. I mean, this is his scheme Manziel was running, and he was the one calling the plays for Manziel. He's now going leaving Texas A&M, and we all know he took the head coaching job back in his alma mater at Texas Tech. But, Tarvin, what do you think his loss means to A&M?
I think that's a great point you just brought up. I think it means a lot. This guy is an offensive mastermind. He was a great quarterback, so he had a big impact on Johnny Football. So I think, Trey, that's a great point you brought up. I'm interested to see in the Oklahoma game and the Cotton Bowl how it really affects them. I mean, does Johnny Manziel come back down to earth? Does Texas A&M struggle? You know, the play calling, is it bad? I mean, I don't understand what's going to happen yet, but I know their head coach, Sumlin, is an offensive mastermind himself, so I'm sure he's going to go out and find someone to run that offense. But, Trey, I think you're right. It is going to hurt them initially.
I think your point about the Cotton Bowl is going to be interesting. I mean, this was already a bowl game that you and I talked about being very interesting. But, you know, Kingsbury, he did something special. I think this guy is, what, the second youngest coach in college football now. I mean, he has rocketed up the coaching ranks very, very quickly. And so it's going to be very intriguing to see if we see a noticeable difference in Manziel's performance without Kingsbury there in his ear, you know, talking to him through the game and, you know, walking him through some of these situations. Because, I mean, Kingsbury was a quarterback who had a lot of success in the college game and has put together some very good game plans for A&M. You know, the Alabama game calling was very, very good. So I'm definitely going to watch this game even closer now just to see how Manziel handled. You know, obviously someone will probably take over the play calling duty for that, but you know, we'll have to see, Tarvin. I think this could be a little bit of a turn for A&M, and, you know, obviously losing the coach like that, I don't think they expected to lose him so soon.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see, you know, if Manziel was a junior or senior, it wouldn't even cross my mind, but I want to see how he handles all of this fame, you know, this whole month off with all the awards and everyone talking about how great he is, what he's done for his team, blah, 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 will he repeat? So, Trey, I'm wondering to see if that affects him at all, and honestly, it could.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, defenses now have a year to prepare for him. He loses his comfort zone, his offensive coordinator, for his first year. You know, is he going to buy in his own hype in the offseason, or is he going to buckle down and prep? And we don't even know who the new offensive coordinator is going to be and how that personality shakes out. So, you know, for Texas A&M, you know, big. I think it's a big loss because as much as progress they made in the SEC their very first year, we'll have to see if Kingsbury, you know, his loss, what that means to them next year. And I think we're going to see an impact in the Cotton Bowl because of it.
And the Cotton Bowl is a bowl we'll talk about later on in the show. We're definitely going to break down some of the bowl games. We're not going to predict them all the way, but we're going to break some of them down, preview some. But, Trey, let's go ahead and get into the NFL action. I mean, it was a lot of great games today, some blowouts. I mean, it was just, if you love, you know, a mixed bag. You had it today, so let's get started.
Yeah, our first game in the NFL is obviously, you know, the NFL with a sixth game, Tarvin, going into this week, this late in the season, six games of teams who are over 500, and we're looking at a playoff, you know, scenario system here. We're looking at, you know, teams making the playoffs. So the first one is the 7-6 Steelers. We're going to the Cowboys, and I know I picked the Steelers in this game, thinking that the Cowboys, you know, would come off that emotionality that they had the week before. But they actually played pretty well in this game, Tarvin, and they held on to the home field, which is something they haven't held on to, and they beat the Steelers. So, Tarvin, what do you think about the Cowboys now at 8-6?
Well, we have a mess in the East right now with three teams tied for first. I mean, it's just a crapshoot now, but I was surprised that Dallas got this win. I found it hard to believe that I couldn't picture how they would win this game. But you know what? They made some big plays. Pittsburgh made some stupid plays, shot themselves in the foot on multiple occasions, man, just to give the Cowboys the game. It's very uncharacteristic, like a Ben Roethlisberger, to throw a pick in overtime to set the table for that field goal. Very, very disappointed in Pittsburgh's play, Trey.
Yeah, I mean, and then, you know, what I've been sort of harking on for a while is the running attack for Pittsburgh. I mean, they still don't have it. I think you saw it. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger threw the ball 40 times today, and they only put 24 points up. So, I mean, they need the rushing attack. This is a Pittsburgh team that needs that balance. I mean, you know, Redmond was their leader with 30 yards rushing. I mean, that's just not going to that's not the balance that they need. And I think that's, you know, that's the reason why Pittsburgh is only watching this season from, you know, outside the playoffs. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. This was a huge loss for them in the playoff picture.
Well, I was counting on them making the playoffs, but it was a must win today, you know, for both teams. And, man, I'm just so impressed with the way Dallas responded this week. And you know what, Trey, do you think it's possible that those deaths could spark Dallas into, heck, winning out and actually being a serious contender in the playoffs, playing with a purpose?
Yeah. You know, and one of the interesting things I saw about this Dallas was, I mean, did you see who was on the sideline, Tarvin? I mean, they still have this guy on the sideline for this game. And so that's another really weird thing that I saw about this game is, you know, this guy is accused of killing a teammate. And I know it was involuntary, but, you know, still, I mean, he's facing criminal charges of killing a teammate, and they have him on the sideline, Tarvin. I mean, do you think that it helped them or hurt them? What do you think about his presence on the sideline?
Trey, and I'm glad you brought that up. You stole my thunder a little bit. But, yeah, why in the world would you allow him on the sideline of your team right now? Whether he's – I mean, you have to suspend him right now. You have to keep him away from the team. They can play for the guys, okay, but you can't be there on the sideline. What does that say about Jerry Jones and actually Garrett?
You know, and correct me if I'm wrong, chat room, but – you know, you use Adderall and you get suspended 4 games. You can't be on the sideline during a game. I mean, as far as I know, this perplexes me. And I get more than anybody, innocent until proven guilty. I get it. But at the same point, I mean, it's got to be a very touchy situation when you have someone accused of killing another teammate. I mean, this is the ultimate, you know, offense of taking someone's life. And, you know, I know the judicial system has to work its process out, but I still think that, you know, him being on the sideline is probably not the best move for Dallas at this point. You know, I just don't think that's a good move. I think if I was the owner, I would not have let that happen. And I think the NFL, you know, I don't know that they know what, you know, obviously they have to wait for the judicial system to work as well, but, you know, this is one of those things they may want to step in and say, hey, you know, hey, Dallas, might not be the smartest move to let him hang out on the sideline.
You're right, Trey. And we're going to pick back up on this. We're going to take a call, but let me give the call-in number since we have a lot of new live listeners on the show. If you want to weigh in at 646-716-5564, we'd love to have you, 646-716-5564. I'm going to take a call from the 806 area code. You're on Weigh In Sports. Who's this?
This is Michael Lusader. How are y'all doing tonight?
Hey.
Good, Michael.
Yeah, I agree with the take I just heard on Josh Brent being on the sideline during the Dallas game. I saw it, and personally, even though that's my team's bitter arch rival, it was pretty disgusting. I mean, for lack of a better term. I mean, if Jerry Jones can sit up in the box, well, why can't he? You know, I don't know. I just think that there's a lot wrong with that franchise, and it all starts with the ownership. And I heard somebody saying earlier that they thought the Cowboys were going to go ahead and win the East, and I'm going to have to disagree with that, not because I'm a Redskin, but because of this. Dallas beats teams they're really not supposed to beat. But the teams that they should be, when you look at the numbers and, you know, you figure your matchups and everything out, they don't. You know, because I couldn't see him beating Pittsburgh today. And that wasn't a biased opinion. You know, you take offenses that are evenly matched, offensive lines are equally bad, and there you go. But Pittsburgh has had, probably now, the number one defense. So, you know, I tend to disagree with that respectfully, of course, but, you know, I just don't believe that they're even going to win the East because they have to face New Orleans next week, right? And I know they're not down to their fourth or fifth corner like Pittsburgh was in that game, but still. Drew Brees, all the weapons, multiple angles. I don't know, and then they see us at FedEx December 30th. So I'm just not buying it. But, you know, hey, that's just my take, you know. But, you know, something I saw earlier that I really, really enjoyed was, you know, Julio Jones is a really, really, really good receiver. I mean, really good. And, you know, playing that pro-style offense, run heavy at Bama, he gets to Atlanta, he's got a quarterback that can air it out, and he finally had a game, you know, where he really showed up and scored and did the things he's been supposed to be doing all along. You know, I mean, everyone was involved. It was a really good game. It was great to watch it after church while I was eating lunch, and, you know, that's about it. So what's going on with the NHL?
Man, Michael, I appreciate, buddy, the call. Sorry we can't get on NHL tonight. We got a schedule. We got to keep up, but we will talk about some NHL. We'll schedule it. Send me a message, and we'll get you on to talk about some NHL. So, Trey, looking back at this, I mean, I just don't understand what ownership is thinking. I mean, especially on a weekend, what happened in Connecticut and everything. Now you're going to bring this guy that killed a teammate onto the sidelines. And I'm not sure if every player in Dallas actually, you know, really felt good about that, honestly.
Yeah, and Jonathan brought up a good point in the chat room. I was actually going to mention that. I understand that, you know, it was the player's family who had been asking Brent to be part of this. They obviously understand that, you know, this is his best friend. I mean, it was unintentional. I think, you know, and it's great that they forgive him and they've, you know, opened up their heart to the fact that he's hurting and obviously, you know, what he must be going through. But my point is, what you just said, Tarvin, is I wonder if this is going to fracture the locker room a little bit, because there have to be some people in there who obviously are pretty angry about the decision that he made, you know, allegedly, to drink and then drive, you know, in that situation. So, and then obviously the effect is that a teammate was killed. So, yeah, the family of the player who was killed has been very forthcoming with having him be a part of everything and be a part of their family and be part of everything. But they're, you know, what are the other players thinking, Tarvin? That's what I'm curious about. What are these other players, where are their mindset at?
But honestly, if I'm a player and I'm upset and the guy's mother actually wants him there, then it's going to soften the blow. I mean, it's going to make me say, if she can forgive him, I can forgive him, you know, especially as a teammate. So I think the mother standing up for him really meant a lot and went a long way with the team.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. But, yeah, I'm sure they're maybe I'm wrong, but they're – maybe this will bring the team together and not fracture them. You know, Tarvin, maybe you're right. Maybe they will rally around the situation.
Exactly. Well, Trey, the number five game was what I thought it would be, but I didn't think it would be the score it was. Take us on to number five.
Well, I mean, I'm still kind of waiting on Couch Potato to give us a call in and tell me how right I was about the Falcons' offense. Because remember, before the season, you know, he said he didn't like this new offensive coordinator, their program, you know, didn't like the way they were going to do, going away from the run more and passing more. Well, turns out, Tarvin, it worked out pretty well for the Atlanta Falcons, and Matt Ryan really beat up on a secondary that was really hurting. They were not, you know, not with their starters in the secondary at cornerback, and Matt Ryan seemed to find the guy who was coming out of the game every single time and really just really destroyed that secondary passing the football.
Yeah, I mean, where were the Giants today? I mean, you know, the team I said in December, they play their best football. They're getting polished up for the playoffs. And where were they, Trey? Is Atlanta that good or are the Giants just that bad right now? I mean, that's terrible. Getting shut out against the Falcons, coming off a butt kicking against the Carolina Panthers, and you get shut out by that team. I just don't understand.
Well, I mean, like I said, there were some injuries in the secondary that you know, when we predicted this game, I didn't bring up, so I kind of forgot about it. But it was one of those points that you kind of you see the writing on the wall. You had a really good quarterback. Atlanta has two fantastic wide receivers, and you know, the New York Giants are hurting at cornerback. And so I kind of saw that piece of it. But the piece that I didn't see at all was the Giants getting shut out. And how do you know I didn't see it at all, Byron? Well, I started the Giants kicker in my fantasy league, and that really didn't really hurt me. So, you know, I didn't see the Giants getting shut out in this game at all. So the defense for Atlanta really played well. And I think this is a huge statement game for the Falcons because the Dirty Birds held home field against the playoff team. And not only did they held home field, Tarvin, they went out and beat them down.
Yeah, so if the Niners lose tonight, that means Atlanta wrapped up home field, correct?
I believe so, yep.
Well, I mean, this was a game, and people don't realize how big of a game this was for the Falcons because, you know, they're going to the playoffs, but, you know, having home field advantage throughout the playoffs is huge, especially when you don't lose at home like the Falcons. They play great football at home. They know how to win. I mean, that dome's just kind to them. But mentally, Trey, if Atlanta would have stumbled today and lost to the Giants, I really question how far they could go in the playoffs due to mentally just thinking they couldn't beat the Giants. I think it was a huge hurdle today getting past the Giants, especially in that fashion. You have to be very confident when you beat the defending champion, you know, almost 40, it's 34 to nothing, correct? It could have been 41 to nothing easy, but
yeah.
They kind of let off a little bit. But, I mean, I'm feeling very good right now if I'm an Atlanta Falcon player, fan, whatever, because you showed today that you could go in there and take care of the defending champion. So I like the Falcons' chances a lot more after seeing that performance today.
Yeah, and I really do appreciate what they did today on defense. I mean, like I said, you know, we know Eli Manning and that offense has been sort of schizophrenic this year. I mean, they've had really gangbuster weeks, and the next week they kind of are flat, and they came in flat this game, and the Falcons came out extremely prepared. So, I mean, again, great win for the Falcons in a statement game, and then that confidence at home. I mean, this is, you know, unless the 49ers win tonight, everybody's going through Atlanta, Tarvin.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see if the Packers, you know, make it coming to Atlanta to see that rematch from a couple of years ago when they came to Atlanta and just destroyed. I just think it's a lot different Atlanta team, more confident. The defense, you know, seems to be in position a lot more and making big plays. I mean, Julio Jones, really, Trey, has made a tremendous impact on this Falcons team. And I've seen a lot of Atlanta games, but seeing Julio Jones week in and week out, he gives this offense another dimension. It helps Roddy White and Gonzalez, but the running game is something that Atlanta's going to have to work on.
Yeah, I mean, they still – but I like – if you watch the very first drive, Tarvin, they were running the ball quite a bit. I mean, they came out really physical at first. I mean, they just basically softened up that D for their passing game. So they kind of did it the opposite way that you would think where, you know, they actually just ran a few times to get them – to get those linebackers thinking about it, and they started throwing the ball around the field. So – yeah, you know, the Falcons did come out with Turner at first, but then, you know, they obviously went to the pass pretty quickly.
Well, in the playoffs, you know, the farther they go in the playoffs, they're going to have – Michael Turner is going to have a big game or two because you can't just go out and throw the ball in the playoffs. But I think Michael Turner saving his energy, saving the life left in those legs, getting some more life to get him that playoff run because I really think Michael Turner – is the reason if they win the Super Bowl, it'll be because of Michael Turner having a great playoff.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have some balance when it comes down to it. You know, obviously it's matchup. You know, you got to look at the matchups and who they may play. I mean, the 49ers are a much different team, and you got to be able to run the ball against the 49ers because they do have a good secondary. But, you know, I mean, look what they're doing right now to the Patriots. But, you know, it depends on, you know, you're playing the Giants, who are a little weak at secondary, or the Packers, who are weak at secondary without Charles Woodson, then it may be a different story.
Yeah, but Trey, hold that thought. We're going to take a call from the 512 area code. You're on Way In Sports. Who's this?
What's up, guys? It's Jay calling. How you doing?
Hey, Jay.
Good. What's going on, Jay?
You know, just following the NFL here, trying to make sense of all what's going on in this playoff picture. I got to tell you, if I'm putting the team as a Super Bowl favorite, even though they look like crap against New England on Monday night, I got to go with the Houston Texans. I mean, you look at the balance they have. You know, Schaub can sling the rock. Andre Johnson today, 151 yards. That's not nothing new. And when it comes to running game, I mean, they're the best ground-and-pound team in football with Arian Foster and Ben Tate. That's a tough out for anybody. I mean, that's a tough out. And I think Houston, now that they're probably going to have home field, I'd have to put them as, you know, my odds-on favorite heading in.
That's an interesting pick, you know, in the AFC. I mean, honestly, looking at both teams, I think they're almost mirror images, Trey.
Well, you know what's interesting about what I've been seeing about the NFL, and I've been kind of waiting on this, Tarvin, is I think the NFC is stronger than the AFC, and that's why I think we've seen the Patriots struggle against some weird teams against the NFC, and as well as the Texans. You know, you've seen the Packers and them, you know, sort of blow out the Texans this year. So I really think that this is what's going to happen. I think it's either going to be the Patriots or the Texans in the AFC, and I think whoever they play against the NFC is going to win. Because I just think the NFC is a little bit more physical right now and more balanced attacks. And I didn't think the Texans were a good team, Jay. I'm not going to disagree with you on that. But, I mean, if they face the Patriots in the playoffs, they're going to have a tough time getting past them again because the Patriots match up so well against the Texans' defense. And, you know, they shut out J.J. Watt completely.
Right, right. And it also, too, I want to mention, too, at this point, they did shut out J.J. Watt. They managed to shut down that rush defense that Houston has, that full-blown pressure. The thing about Houston is they didn't have a fully healthy Jonathan Joseph in that game, too, which there's a guy who doesn't quite get as much recognition as he deserves. That guy is a true underrated shutdown corner when it comes right down to it. It's going to be interesting. I mean, the Patriots, I can speak English, I promise. They're the team to beat until somebody beats them. But I'm just wondering, you know, when it gets to Houston, it gets late in the season, you got the full pressure on. I mean, stopping them once could be done. Can you stop them Bulls twice? So that's what I'm wondering.
Yep. Well, man, I appreciate the call, Jay, and make sure you keep listening and call back anytime. We love having you on the show. That's some great points, Trey, but saying Houston is the best team right now, I mean, I can't really, you know, slam him for that because, I mean, they look very good. But that performance they had last week against New England, I don't know if they're ready yet, honestly, Trey. I think the Falcons, I'm going to put the Falcons ahead of them.
Well, like I said, I think I put several NFC teams actually in the front runner position. The only team in the AFC, we didn't talk about it just now, that really still intrigues me is Denver. They've been playing lights-out football against a lot of, you know, teams that up until this week that we really didn't know much about. But, you know, we'll talk about Denver in a second here, Tarvin. But Denver is a team that could clearly get to there as well.
Denver is that team right now that really still nobody's talking about to make a deep run. And, you know, everybody's talking about the Patriots, the Falcons, the Texans, but nobody's really talking about the Denver Broncos, and that's our next game, correct? No, it's not our next game.
Well, our next game is, and maybe we'll hear from Quinn, maybe not, but the Bears, I went with the Bears, Quinn, and you let me down. Jay Cutler didn't look good in this game, Tarvin. And the Pack took it to them, and what became a very big game, the Pack again. They were undefeated in the division, Tarvin, and I should have kept with that statistic.
Well, I picked the Packers just for several reasons, and I just couldn't see Jay Cutler. I think he was, you know, last week he got hurt, had a neck injury. I still think he was hurt more than what people were letting on. Number two is that offensive line of the Bears. You know, I just can't imagine them beating Green Bay with that offensive line, even though Green Bay had several stars out, went on defense and offense. I just figured Aaron Rodgers would, you know, have a great game. But, man, what has happened to Chicago, Trey? What is that, 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 6 they've lost?
I think 5 out of 6.
Yeah, terrible. I mean, a team that looked good, you know, that was a serious contender, just went to crap. And my question to you and Quinn when he calls in is, how long are you going to keep Jay Cutler? I mean, how many chances are you going to give this guy? I just think the team maybe needs to go a different direction, coaching and maybe at the quarterback position, Trey.
No, I disagree. Cutler's a good quarterback. I mean, what Chicago needs to do is seriously revamp their offensive line. I mean, their defense is actually pretty good when they're healthy. But their offensive line has been a position they haven't either gone after in free agency very hard. And they really haven't, if you look at their draft boards, they haven't really put an emphasis on offensive line. They've tried to go everywhere else in their drafts the last few years. So if I'm the Bears, or if I'm Jay Cutler, I'm saying, look, get me, I don't care, you spend your first 3 draft picks on an offensive line or go out and grab somebody huge to play the left tackle position so I don't get blindsided. And, you know, at the end of the game, Tarvin, I saw the Packers, they rushed and you know, I great for me because I'm a big Packers fan. So you know, hey, I love to win. But I was watching the game, and you saw the Packers rushed two down linemen, two, against an entire offensive line for the Bears, and they still got to Cutler within, I think, 5 or 6 seconds. I was counting like one Mississippi, two Mississippi, because I was like, man, 5 or 6 seconds, you can't hold off two defensive linemen for an entire offensive line. That shows you how terrible Chicago's offensive line is. I mean, there's no quarterback who can be doing any job better than Cutler with basically having to Olay, with the offensive lineman Olaying every defensive guy.
That is crazy, getting pressure with two. I mean, it makes it impossible on Cutler to find anyone open. I mean, it's just, I mean, that's terrible. But, I mean, I'm not saying Cutler's a terrible quarterback, Trey. I just don't like the guy, honestly. I just don't like his attitude. I think he's a punk. And, you know, that's just my opinion, but it doesn't mean much. It's just me being a fan of the game. That's what I think of Cutler. But guess who's on the line, Trey? I'll give you one guess.
It better be Quinn, and he better not say the Bears beat themselves today.
Quinn, did the Bears beat themselves today?
No, they didn't.
What's
all
going
right
on, buddy?
But one thing I can say is for all those things that they called Jeffrey on for those little wimpy push-offs, and then on that fourth down, big fourth down, and Sam Shields grabs a hold of his jersey and there's a no call, I think that's a bunch of bull crap. And then these refs are calling little push-offs on Jeffrey that he's doing that usually don't get called. I think that was lame, but it's whatever.
Well, I'll agree with you, Quinn, on the one that Jeffrey pushed off on the sideline. But the touchdown that was called back, that was legit. That was a legitimate call.
Yeah. I honestly don't know what has happened to the Bears, but I know a lot of Bears fans are calling for Lovie's head. I kind of disagree with that. I don't know if they should do that. I think some of it is just the Bears have lost it mentally after they got blew out by San Francisco. I just think they lost it mentally and haven't regrouped since for some reason. I think it's the players mainly, just their mindset and what they're thinking mentally.
So Quinn, tell me about the draft this season when the Bears come. Are they going to go for the offensive line?
I think they'll probably, like they have the past 2 years, they usually try and get a first round offensive lineman, so I'm sure they'll try and do the same thing. I agree that they need to get better offensive linemen or get or do something in free agency.
Yeah.
Try and get a guy, pick up a guy from free agency.
All right. Well, Quinn, buddy, we appreciate the call as always. Quinn's a regular on the show, living up in Wisconsin, Trey. So it's always good to have, you know, have his feedback, what's going on. But the Bears are done, correct?
Well, they're on the outside looking in. I mean, now they don't really control their own destiny. You know, they're 8-6. They have some problems to get to the playoffs because right now they're not in. So they're not out of it, Tarvin, but they certainly need a lot of help.
Yeah, and it couldn't happen to a better quarterback, Jay Cutler. So number three, Trey, like you were about to talk about Denver and Baltimore. Tell me what you thought about Mr. Manning today.
Well, I'm gonna not answer your question, but I'm gonna pull the politician move and I'm gonna talk about the Ravens because I gotta tell you, you know, we talked about Flacco and you hear all the conversations about how he's elite or not elite. Well, he sure did not play very elite today. I mean, Joe Flacco. I think it's time to stop talking about Joe Flacco in any kind of elite setting. I mean, this guy is an okay quarterback. He's an average quarterback, but he is not in any kind of elite status. I mean, the fumble he had, I mean, just at the most inopportune time today, I mean, Joe Flacco just, 20 for 40, only 50% today, threw a pick. And again, with the Ravens, Tarvin, only 12 carries. And I know Denver got up, in the second quarter. They scored two touchdowns and, sort of pulling the game away. But only 12 touches on the rock for Ray Rice, one of the better running backs in the game. And you're only giving him 12 attempts. To me, it just doesn't make any sense, Tarvin. And the guy had 3 receptions, so he has 15 total touches. But I just wonder, this is the new offensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens, and it looked like the same crappy offense.
Well, you have to look at also the score in that game. It limited Ray Rice's touches probably, being behind the entire game. I think they were down, 14 or 17 at halftime. So that hurt. But, yeah, I've heard people, Trey, tell me Joe Flacco was a top 10 quarterback. I think the guy's terrible. And if anybody disagrees, call 646-716-5564. Let us know why. Because I think he's terrible. I look at him. He's not a big-time quarterback. When is Baltimore going to wake up? And finally, I never remember Baltimore with a good quarterback, Trey, ever.
Yeah, and here's the thing you're talking about, even in Baltimore – they don't have their defense to really even fall back on this year. They give up 34 points. Moreno had 118 yards and a touchdown rushing. Peyton threw for 200. So, even on defense, this team is suspect. So, the Ravens are at 9-5, and I understand they're still in the playoffs, but I don't think this team is going to go very far. I think they're probably going to be one and done, even if they get into the playoffs, Tarvin, which could be it's at some jeopardy right now. Luckily, the AFC is not as deep as the NFC for Baltimore, because the NFC's got much better teams who are going to be left out of the playoffs this year. But I think Baltimore is not going to do very much if they get the playoffs, which they probably will.
Well, let's talk about something you tried to avoid, Peyton Manning. look at what he's done this season, and I've said it almost every week, and I keep saying it because I'm amazed at how fast he bounced back. People thought Peyton Manning was just going to come in and be an old man with an injury, and he's just turning into, again, just the best quarterback, one of them in the NFL, leading a Denver team. Honestly, Trey, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl this year. That's how good they are with Peyton Manning. If I had one drive, one game to win, I would want Peyton Manning as my quarterback, and I think these Broncos are buying into Peyton Manning, and every week, they're getting better and better. A very dangerous team, Trey.
Yeah, I joked about not talking about Peyton, but the fact is Denver is a very, very good football team. Defensively-wise, they're very stout. Von Miller's putting up huge numbers. No one's talking about it. Peyton Manning has just been incredible. He's not turning the ball over at all. They have an offensive line that actually has been pretty good at protecting him. But a lot of that is, if you watch the games, is Peyton Manning's ability to change the play at the line of scrimmage, to know where the blitz is coming from and call for the right protection. Peyton Manning is such a general on the field when it comes to that. And that oftentimes can save you as a quarterback. You call out the guy blitzing so your offensive linemen know where to change their blocks to as a quarterback, or if you're going to, say, leave the running back in to chip on somebody, that can make the difference in a pass down the field. And you see that game after game with Peyton Manning, and you just don't see that kind of stuff with, Joe Flacco.
Exactly. And looking at the MVP race this year, who are you voting for if you had to vote, Peterson or Manning?
Well, I don't know that it's just down to those two. I think Tom Brady is going to get some votes as well. Right now, Tarvin, I think if Adrian Peterson gets the Vikings into the playoffs, I think he would have my vote just because, he's a one-man show. But Peyton Manning has to be right up there with him because, obviously you're seeing what he's done with Denver. But, you got to remember, Denver was a playoff team last year. So, the leap isn't so high for what he's done. Now, I think Peyton Manning might take them to the next level of the playoffs and maybe win a Super Bowl. But, what Adrian Peterson is doing for the Vikings, to me, is a little bit greater.
Yeah, the Vikings have zero on offense besides Peterson. No passing game. not even a threat of a passing game, like Jason says. Ponder sucks. And he single-handedly, like you said, Peterson is going to run, and he runs, and he feels effective, busting 82-yard touchdown runs every game almost. So Peyton Manning is the man, no doubt about it. But if I had a vote, I would have to vote for Adrian Peterson. He did a lot more for his team, just in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that Peyton Manning is putting up incredible numbers. Again, you know, you're talking about a guy who could win the comeback player of the year and also win the MVP. That's pretty incredible stuff.
Oh, it is, and it's, we'll keep following these Broncos and the Ravens to see. But Sonny did say the Ravens were done about 4 or 5 weeks ago. He said they were done, so he might be right on that one. So we'll have to give him credit if it happens. So take us to number two.
Well, our number two game, we kind of already mentioned at least briefly the number two game. So, Tarvin, let me ask you this. The Texans beat the Colts, but the Colts were on the road, and I got to tell you, Andrew Luck fought in this game quite a bit and actually let him back. And it almost for a while there, it looked like Andrew Luck was going to make this into something close. What do you think about Andrew Luck and the Colts, and then are the Texans a front-runner for the AFC?
I do think the Texans are the second front-runner for the AFC. I think New England still, after that beating they put on them, is still imprinted on my mind that, man, New England's just so much better than Houston when Tom Brady. But it is one game, though. But, man, looking at Andrew Luck, Trey, he gets better every week. And I think a lot of other teams and players around the league are starting to respect this guy. He looks like he's been playing 3 years, Trey, honestly.
Yeah. What impressed me about this game is you've seen throughout this year how poorly Andrew Luck has played on the road. And we're going to see, I think, this turnaround. I think the Colts may end up beating the Texans to their play, I think, in 2 weeks again in Indy. But Andrew Luck threw no interceptions today, which to me has shown a great progression. Because, I mean, this is a guy who on the road, I think, was averaging 2 interceptions on the road a game. So, you know, no interceptions against what's supposed to be a very good Texans defense. J.J. Watt has had a big game, Tarvin. He really impacted this game. He was all over Andrew Luck. And that was, I think, quite honestly, the difference in Luck's performance today. But even with that, Andrew Luck still, I mean, he was under 200 yards, but no interceptions, which tells me a lot about his progression.
Well, I'll say he's getting better. I can just tell, like, every week he's just getting more comfortable. You can tell just week in and week out he's getting more comfortable. And like you said, the numbers weren't great today, but I just think his team's bought into him, and I think that said a lot for a rookie. So, I mean, there wasn't a surprise in this game, Trey. So our number one game is playing right now. San Francisco 49ers up 14-3 over the Patriots. I'm a little concerned.
Well, you know, I'm a little surprised by what we're seeing right now. And to answer someone's question, is you know, they're talking about Alden Smith and his 19.5 sacks. He has not increased that today so far against Tom Brady. But even without that, right now the 49ers are up 14-3, and they have the football with at the two-minute warning in the first half, looking like they may try to score again, Tarvin.
Yeah, I mean, if they get a touchdown here, it's going to be very tough, even for New England's offense because of the defense of San Francisco. And, my God, Colin Kaepernick just ran down to the 15-yard line on 3rd and 8. First down, under 2 minutes left. I mean, see, that's the difference he brings to this offense than Alex Smith. Alex Smith could never do that. So I think that's why Harbaugh has this guy in.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a shame. What really is a shame, Tarvin, is if, you know, I had not played Josh Freeman as my second quarterback in our league, Colin Kaepernick would be really helping me out as my other quarterback. But yet I'm still down by like 60 points, so it really doesn't matter. But, hey, Kaepernick is looking good today. And we talked about this being a real test for him because New England had been able to really, you know, frustrate a lot of good quarterbacks this year. I mean, you saw Matt Schaub have a pretty terrible day against New England. So the fact that Kaepernick is playing so well, you know, 8 of 14, 107 yards, 2 touchdowns, and, you know, so far 19 yards rushing in the first half is saying something for him.
Well, and I also have to let the fans know out there that you and I will not be matching up in the Super Bowl next week, that – Trey, you choked this week. You made the wrong decision in your lineup, and I was looking forward to playing you this week. But you know what? Without Adrian Peterson, you know, I wouldn't be there either. So Adrian Peterson has taken my team on his back, and he's taken me to the Super Bowl, man.
Yeah, and Jonathan said I'm a failure. Well, I mean, Jonathan, this league, we've had this league for about, what, 12 years now. And it is an insanely tough league. It is not easy to win. I won in our very first year, and I have failed to win it in 11 straight years after that. So we start two quarterbacks. We have individual defenders. So it's kind of a crazy league. It's very competitive. You got to really be on it. The fact that I made the playoffs this year was good, but Tarvin's right. I started the wrong guy every single week. I have Eric Decker on my bench right now who went off. So, you know, Tarvin, the criticism is for sure going to sit with me all offseason in fantasy football.
Well, I think you made a good point about our league. And we've been together a long time, and everybody in this league understands fantasy football. I mean, it's different to understand football and understand fantasy football. I mean, these guys, you can't make a pickup because everybody's faster. You can't trade because they'll reject it. You can't get over on anyone. So Trey's the commissioner of this league, and he's done a good job for 12 years. He's tried to screw me several years. But other than that, he's done a good job. So congratulations, Trey, for a job well done.
Well, and just since you brought up that point, I'm gonna tell our listeners this. I mean, Brian Tarvin once traded for Randy Moss in his heyday when Randy Moss was blowing up for a kicker. So you just got to watch Tarvin in these fantasy leagues. It's a full-time job.
Hold on. I threw in Quadri Ishmael, too.
That's right. You give him Quadri Ishmael. I forgot that Quadri Ishmael was an NFL player.
Hey, I remember my worst draft pick ever, Trey. What was that?
Your worst draft pick was Jeff George when he was not even in the NFL anymore.
No, he was in the NFL. He didn't act like he was. I remember. I was gambling on Jeff George having a huge year, I remember. And, man, that was the last time I made that mistake. But, yeah, it's been fun this year. And you know, I haven't made many ad drops this season. I don't think I've made any, really, except for bye week replacement. So I've been lucky not to have the injury bug. And you know, that's what it takes in fantasy. You have to avoid the injury bug, and you have to hopefully have your players play at the end of the season. That's what's hurt me for several years, is having players that were good that were, you know, just sitting out, maybe playing a quarter or a half trade, and that's what's bit me in the butt several years.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we love fantasy football on the show as well, and we oftentimes talk about, you know, players to pick up and that kind of stuff, but it's playoff time, and, you know, Tarvin deserves all the smack talk he can, because I did want to play him in the Super Bowl and beat him, but yeah, man, I got upset. I wish to say it's an upset, but I was favored to lose this week. So
yeah, but you making the Final Four, that's all that matters, man. I mean, it's hard to make that Super Bowl, but all right, man. So you know what we talked about college football, we talked about the two games, but I want to go through, Trey, if you don't mind, and the listeners. I want to talk some college football. I just want to talk about some of the matchups we have going up in the bowl games, Trey. I don't want to talk about the toilet bowls, the Papa John's bowl, some of those games. I want to talk about the games that really matter. So do you mind if we do that for a few minutes?
Yeah, and before we get on that, Tarvin, I did promise Jonathan I would ask you about this real quick. It is college football, so Florida State did name a defensive coordinator this week, Jeremy Pruitt. He was the defensive back coach. Let me tell you a little bit about who he was. If Kirby Smart had left Alabama, the word was that he was going to be the defensive coordinator at Alabama. This guy was a former high school football defensive coach for Hoover High School. Anybody who knows Alabama or even high school football, Hoover High School was actually ranked nationally when this guy was there on defense. That's how good of defense he is. And this guy is known as basically owning South Alabama and the panhandle of Florida when it comes to recruiting. So it's kind of a gamble for Florida State, Tarvin, but it could be a very, very high win for them because this guy recruits so well. What do you think about this move for Florida State, and what does it mean for Alabama?
Well, honestly, I think he's classified, in opinions of people that are around the game of recruiting, like a Trooper Taylor kind of like guy that stretches it, pushes the envelope, fixes grades maybe. I mean, he's involved in that, I believe, that rumor that a player got his grades changed or something. But I would be careful with that. That's the only thing. But rumors are rumors, man. Until it's proven, it doesn't really matter. But I know he was involved in something in Hoover with switching a player's grades. So I don't know, man. It's a gamble, but it's a good coach. I mean, it could help you get into Alabama and get some of these players. Damian Craig, And he's another one of those guys that they recruit South Alabama very well. So it seems like to me you have two very good coaches there.
Yeah, I mean, listen to some of the players that they have developed under his, you know, since he took over as defensive back coach in 2010, he was player development coach from 2007 to 2010 in Alabama. I mean, three first-round picks, Mark Barron, Ray Kirkpatrick, and Daquan Menzie, all first-round picks from Alabama in the defensive secondary as he was the defensive back coach. So, obviously, there's a little bit of worry that he hasn't got the in-game experience in the college program because, you know, this is a guy who was coaching high school and defensive coaches before he got picked up by Alabama, basically because of his recruiting abilities. But we'll have to see, Tarvin, if this high-risk, high-reward works out. I don't know if Jonathan wants to call in.
Jonathan's in the queue. He's in the queue right now, Jonathan. What you got, buddy?
I just want to let you guys know how excited, ecstatic, relieved. There are many, many, many adjectives to describe how I feel about this hiring. And for a little information on something that most of you guys probably don't know, the last time we hired a defensive coordinator from Alabama, his name was Mickey Andrews.
Yep.
So we all saw how that went. And if y'all remember the story of Bobby Bowden, Bobby Bowden came from West Virginia, turned down LSU, and stayed at Florida State. Well, we got Jimbo from LSU, and he turned down West Virginia to stay at Florida State. So I have a feeling we have a good mixture right now. I feel good about Pruitt. I feel good about his recruiting. We lost Coach Grant, a running backs coach. He's the new offensive coordinator at Cincinnati. And that's a very, very, very tough loss. But Pruitt is apparently just as good, and apparently, from what I understand, Craig is doing a phenomenal job. And don't let anybody fool you. Dexter Carter comes around, and Dexter Carter helps out with recruiting big time. You know, from what I heard, actually, Dexter Carter, and possibly just a rumor. You know, take it at face value. But Wharton Dunn might replace Coach Grant as our running backs coach.
Man, that's a big one, Jonathan. And, man, thanks for the call and the updates. And we're going to have Jonathan on. He's going to get us a couple of guests, Trey, ex-Florida State football players, possibly current coaches, to come on the show and do some interviews. I'm sure that'll make you very happy.
Oh, yeah. You know, I was talking about Florida State. But, you know, I think this move is going to hurt Alabama recruiting-wise just a little bit. Obviously, it's not going to be – they're going to be just fine without him, but – you know, this is going to be a coaching change, at least recruiting-wise, could help Florida State nab a couple of players. So we'll see. This is one of those ones, Tarvin, that we'll be watching in February as you and I host this show when it comes down to those recruiting changes to see, you know, how many of these guys flip because of these recruiting changes. And basically at Florida State or at Alabama, if any of these guys switch out because of all the losses that coaching that Florida State's had. I mean, they have a lot of guys who could be up for grabs.
Yeah, that's true. I think as long as Saban's at Alabama, though, they won't really struggle in recruiting too much. So as long as he's there, and Kirby's smart, he's a good recruiter. So it's going to be interesting to see how Florida State can turn it around. Can Jimbo Fisher actually get over the hump? I know Andrew Tonge in the chat room from Last Word Sports News. He's a big FSU fan, and I don't know if he thinks so. But welcome Roger in the chat room from NDB Media. And Pull No Punches Radio's in the chat room. Juan Aponte, I hope I said that right. And the other one. So a lot of people in the chat room tonight. We appreciate y'all coming. But, Trey, I have to talk about some college football, man. I've been going through withdrawals for a long time now, second week in a row. I'm just shaking over here. I have to talk some college football. So I want to start out with a game and get your opinion on it. Baylor versus UCLA. So Baylor started off the season terrible, and they turned it on, beating Oklahoma State and Kansas State at the end. So this is an intriguing matchup because I think UCLA is a very good football team right now, and Baylor's hot. Who wins this game?
You know, I think, if I'm correct, Carmen, it hasn't the line in this game going to a pick 'em.
Yep, it's a pick 'em.
Yeah, I think this is one of those ones that that people are taking that Baylor hot streak towards the end of the year and saying, well, maybe Baylor's becoming something. But I think with the time in between this bowl game I just like what Jim Mora is doing at UCLA. I think he's going to have time to prep for this team. Now, Baylor's got a fantastic quarterback that we talked about several times on the show, Tarvin. So he's going to have some success in this game. But I think UCLA and actually having a defense, which, you know, they do, is going to impact the ability for Baylor to score all the points they want to score. I think UCLA wins a close one, but this one's going to be higher scoring than UCLA wants it to be. And that's going to be the real problem for UCLA, is keeping the score down.
And I'm interested to see how UCLA plays after that heartbreaking loss to Stanford. Do they really want to be there? Because I think Baylor does. They really do want to be there. So that'll be an interesting one. So Sonia says these games suck that we're talking about. And she wants to talk about some real games. So, okay, Sonia, BYU versus San Diego State, is that better? No, seriously, we're going to move on. We're going to talk about the Minnesota Gophers, Trey, against Texas Tech. Now with Tommy Tuberville out of the picture, Minnesota finally making a bowl game. Who do you like in this game? Do you think Minnesota can slow down Texas Tech at all?
No, I think Kingsbury going over there, I mean, obviously he doesn't have a whole lot of time to implement anything, but I think he's going to have an impact on this game instantly. From what I hear, he's going to coach this game, Target. I don't know, have you heard anything different?
Who's going to coach?
Kingsbury.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is, but I don't know if I would let him right now, honestly, just taking the job. I'd let the season end because – you have some seniors in that program that I don't think they deserve to have a coach come in like that for one game. I think you let the next man in charge come up and coach these guys. It never seems to work out well, in my opinion. I just don't think it's a good idea. But I just don't know if Minnesota can slow this offense down, honestly. Minnesota's offense, so that's the problem in this game, trying to keep up with the Texas Tech offense. I think Texas Tech's a 14-point favorite, maybe 13 or 14 points. And I think that's about right. Jason Minson's Gophers made it to a bowl game, but that's as far as they're going to get, Trey.
Yeah, I agree with you, 100%.
All right, the next one, Oregon State and Texas. I mean, these are some good games. And trust me, we're going to go in detail about these games, you know, in the next few weeks. I just wanted to touch on a few good ones that I'm seeing coming up, Oregon State and Texas. I mean, is this a game for Mac Brown that he has to win, Trey?
I don't think he has to win it. I mean, obviously, Oregon State is favored in this game. So, but I think being that this is an Alamo Bowl game and this is going to be probably a Texas favorite crowd, I think this is kind of like a Texas home field advantage. So I think the folks in Texas are going to expect to win it, even though, you know, Mike Riley and Oregon State have been putting together a very quality program this year and product on the field. I think Texas has a shot in this game, Tarvin. I think they really do.
Yeah, I like Oregon State in this game. I just think, you know, that they want to be there a little more than Texas does. And you know, looking at this game, this is very important for Mac Brown because I really think he's on the hot seat, in my opinion. I'd get him out of there anyway. You know how I feel about that. So if he comes in and lays an egg against a Pac-12 team and embarrasses the school, I'm telling you, I mean, a replacement's coming. If they know what's best for them, they'll get a replacement in there now. But, Trey, SEC, man, I mean, there's 9 teams in the SEC made a bowl game. Out of those 9, give me a couple that concern you maybe that won't win.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm not going to predict any of them just yet, just to hold off for our show on it. But there are some games that I think the SEC could be in trouble. And it's not just because, you know, that you look at the matchup on paper and it's not because they look bad on paper. It's just that coming off of, you know, certain games and certain losses and whether they're hyped for the game or they're going to come out flat. And one of them is the LSU-Clemson game. I think Clemson has a lot to play for in this game, and I don't know how LSU is going to come prepared. And obviously you and I have a very particular opinion about LSU's quarterback. So, you know, with the talent on the field for Clemson, you got to be thinking that they better not show up like they did last year in a bowl game, Tarvin. They need a good bowl performance this year. So I think Clemson, that game actually matters quite a bit for them. What do you think about Clemson, Tarvin? And they're going to come out flat like they did last year and just get blown out?
Yeah, I mean, no. I mean, this game, I'm giving Sonia and Jason in the chat room, you know, about Minnesota, but it's hard for me to talk when my team's 3-9, so I can't really say too much about the Gophers. But looking at the LSU-Clemson game, that is a game that concerns me. just because I don't know LSU's hunger in this game. Do they really want to be there? I mean, this team's used to BCS bowls and playing for national championships, and all of a sudden they're playing a Clemson team. I think Clemson can move the ball on LSU, and my question to you, Trey, is can LSU score enough points on Clemson?
I mean, Mettenberger and that offense is going to be the question. I think Clemson will move the ball, so we'll have to see how good LSU's offense is, or if LSU's defense really is, you know, that impactful, they shut Clemson down completely. So that's the game I have on my watch list, Harvin. Somebody in the chat room just hit the other one, which was the Northwestern-Mississippi State game. I don't think very highly of Mississippi State. Not saying that Northwestern is very good, but I just don't think very highly of Mississippi State this year.
Yeah, I think that's the game. I mean, I picked the SEC to go 9-0 in the bowl game, just looking their favorite in all games. But LSU and Mississippi State are the two that scared me. I think Northwestern's a pretty good football team, but I don't think real high of Mississippi State either. But if you look at the rest of the SEC games, you know, Vanderbilt, NC State, I think that's a win. I mean, you look at Michigan, South Carolina, I think Michigan, Trey, had three players suspended. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I did. Three players. So that was a game that I kind of thought at first when I saw the suspensions, Tarvin, I was like, no, Michigan doesn't have a shot.
No, South Carolina is going to be way too much for them. And Georgia, Nebraska, I mean, Georgia has struggled in bowl games in years past, but I think they're too much for Nebraska. I just don't think Nebraska can get it done. I saw them give up 200 points to a 7-5 Wisconsin team. So I'm not very worried about them, honestly. And then you have Texas A&M, Oklahoma. That's going to be a great matchup, Trey.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I'm coming more on the Oklahoma bandwagon. I don't know where I'll be when it comes down to January 4th. But with Manziel and with, you know, losing his offensive coordinator, him being a freshman, having that security blanket ripped from him, I just really worry about his performance in that game. And as we talked about, and I think Jason Mensen agrees with me on this, you know, Manziel hasn't produced very, very well when it comes to ranked opponents. You know, so we'll have to see, Tarvin, on that game as well. But, yeah, I'm not so sold on Texas A&M dominating there.
That is, I'm not sold. I still have flashbacks of that Notre Dame game. The way I saw Notre Dame go on the road and just dominate this Oklahoma team. And right now, Texas A&M's playing better football than anyone. But, again, we talked about them losing their offensive coordinator, which it could be huge for them. And, honestly, you know, Texas A&M was hot. But how hot are they going to be after having, you know, 5 or 6 weeks off, Trey?
Well, and that's the point is, you know, where is their offensive scheme going to go? You know, has Manziel, who's basically been doing a publicity tour for Heisman, you know, is he putting in the work for this game? You know, I just, you know, without their offensive coordinator, you know, sitting down and going over and basically setting up, you know, the game plan, you know, a lot of offensive coordinators will start the game with, you know, scripted plays, you know, so where are they at in their game planning for this game? So I got questions. I know that you harken back to that Notre Dame loss for Oklahoma, but I just think, you know, when you see coaches coming off of teams during the bowl week, it is always a problem for those teams to sort of move past that with preparation-wise.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, bowl games are so hard to predict with the point spreads especially. I mean, that's what gets you. And there's a game I want to ask you about, Trey, in Southern California and Georgia Tech. I mean, USC is a team that can't stop the run. They can't tackle. They can't play defense. Playing against a Georgia Tech team that just runs a crazy style offense, option. I mean, just how is USC going to prepare for this?
Well, I mean, I don't know. They are preparing, Carl. They're probably surfing. I don't know. USC, I'll tell you this. If USC loses this game, which they're favored by 10 on, against a terrible Georgia Tech team who was 6-7, then Lane Kiffin should be fired immediately. I mean, there is no way that the talent level on USC should lose to Georgia Tech. There's absolutely no way it should happen. That said, it may happen. But if Lane Kiffin loses this game, if I'm a USC fan, I am calling for his head.
Yeah, I think Lane Kiffin should have been fired anyway, and he shouldn't even be coaching a bowl game. So looking at it, Southern Cal is going to struggle against Georgia Tech to stop their offense, but I think Georgia Tech is going to really struggle to stop the passing game of Southern Cal. I mean, this could be I mean, this honestly is going to be over 100 points scored in this game, in my opinion, just looking at it, because neither team can stop the other. I mean, it's got 30-second drives written all over this game. Because,
yeah.
I mean, Kiffin will get fired if they lose, though, trust me. He embarrasses the school losing to Georgia Tech, a 6-17, like you said. I just don't see any way he keeps his job.
And, you know, part of me wants to see him win just because I think USC is such a better team. They're recruiting wise. I mean, if they got a real good coach in there, USC could be so dominant. So I like seeing USC like they are now personally. So, I mean, you know, I don't know if I want to see them lose. It's kind of bittersweet. You know, you like to see Lane Kiffin lose, but, you know, I don't want to see him fired, them get some real coach in there.
I don't know. As long as he's at Southern Cal, we know they're not going to ever win a championship. But, all right, let's move to a couple of BCS bowl games. Looking Oregon and Kansas State. I mean, to me, honestly, that's the best game of the bowl season, Trey.
I mean, obviously, it's number one on my watch list for sure. I mean, this game, I mean, no real changes in either program staff and that kind of stuff. So, you know, both of these teams are basically preparing, you know, and the real question is Chip Kelly go to the NFL? So, you know, that's the real only real story. I guess let me ask you this, Tarvin. Oregon's favored almost 10 points in this game. I mean, do you think that spread holds up?
I do. I just think Kansas State's defense is garbage, as you saw against Baylor and most everybody they played. They can't tackle. They can't play good defense. Texas marched up and down the field on them. So, Oregon, if you're going to try to stop them, I mean, in a shootout, it's just a bad recipe to play. Oregon's a good football team. They had a bad game. You know, they played a bad game against Stanford, just like Kansas State had a bad game. But the way Kansas State lost to Baylor, I mean, it just exposed them. I mean, it's just one of those games where you've said, oh, no, it cost the Heisman Trophy. And it cost a national championship possibly for Kansas State. So I like Oregon big in this game, Trey. I don't want to give all my predictions now, but I just don't see any way Kansas State can slow Oregon down.
And Jonathan asked us to talk about the Orange Bowl a little bit. And we won't talk about it too long, but here's my thoughts, Tarvin, on the Orange Bowl. One is you know, Northern Illinois loses their head coach. And so I thought, my first thought was, well, okay, well, Florida State will be just fine in this game. Well, then Florida State starts losing almost every coordinator possible, running back coach, defensive coach, you know, secondary coach, you name it. They've lost a lot of coordinators. And so it begs the question, Tarvin, is who is prepping Florida State? Are they really even prepping for Northern Illinois? Are they taking the game seriously? Because, I mean, the coaching staff has been decimated. So who's prepping these guys and, you know, how seriously are they taking it? So I got to give Northern Illinois a big chance in this game, Tarvin.
I can't. I mean, I can't give Northern Illinois a chance. I mean, I know how Florida State plays, but here's the deal. I mean, it's different when you play a team that if you lose, you're going to be the laughing stock of football for a year, and you're not going to get a chance to make up for it. In the regular season, you can lose to a team like that and come back and make up for it. But Florida State, no way they take this game so lightly that they don't at least pull out the win. They may be – I mean, Northern Illinois hasn't played anybody – like they're about to see, the athletes on the field, the speed, the way just to get the speed of the game is going to be the big shot for Northern Illinois, Trey. I think they get beat bad in this game, and I don't even think Florida State tries to beat them that bad, but it's just going to happen that way.
Well, let me ask you this about the BCS tournament. Speaking of potential blowouts, Charlie Strong stayed at Louisville, which is quite surprising to a lot of folks, including myself. Does Louisville have a shot rallying around the fact that Charlie Strong is staying there, their quarterback will be healthy, and Florida may be looking past Louisville, thinking to other things? Any shot at, that you're giving the 14-point favorite Florida or 13.5-point favorite?
I mean, this is a Florida team that blocked a punt to beat Lafayette. I mean, that barely beat Bowling Green. But the difference in this game, too, is speed. I think looking at the defense of Florida, probably the best in the country, that's the difference in this game. Bridgewater is going to get killed in this game. He'll probably be off on a stretcher by halftime. Florida's not going to light up the scoreboard with the offense, but I do see maybe a pick six, a fumble recovery, a punt return for a touchdown, something like that to keep adding points. So I think the game will be close for a half, but I think Florida makes too many big plays. I don't think Louisville can can score on Florida, and that's the big difference to me in this game.
Yeah, I mean, there's one thing that some of these guys have been playing for, which is draft stock. I mean, some of these guys for Florida on defense are just so good. I think they're gonna. You're right. They're gonna put some hurting on some of these receivers and running backs for Louisville.
Yeah, and Muschamp, it can't be overlooked the job he's done at Florida. I mean, I was wrong about the guy when he came in. I didn't really think he would be able to put Florida back on the map. And I remember last year, we probably talked about it. I really wasn't a big Muschamp fan, and I'm still not. But he's done a great job this year of recruiting. He's got the number one recruiting class. I mean, that defense is, Trey, it's scary. I mean, that's how good it is. So Muschamp and that intensity, there's no way Florida overlooks Louisville. Muschamp won't allow it.
Yeah, I think they're going to be ready for this game. You're right. I think we'll see it. Madriscal is going to be healthy by this point, Tarvin, in the season as well. I mean, he's going to have time to rest his ankle. So, and remember, this team's a much better team when he plays and he's healthy. So, you're right. I think Florida is probably not going to have much problem with Louisville.
And I want to welcome XL Sports Recruiting into the chat room. Welcome to the show. And Trey, again, we're going to be talking about all of these games in detail. You know, I just want everybody to know. I want everybody to make plans to join us. Starting Wednesday night, we're going to start our bowl breakdown, the real bowl breakdown. So make sure and join us. So the Stanford-Wisconsin game, Trey, 8-5 Wisconsin team playing Stanford. Give me a chance that Wisconsin has to beat Stanford. What is it, 30%, 40%? Has Trey left the building? I think Trey, hold on, let me get Trey back on there. Trey, are you there?
Hey, yeah, sorry, I think I got muted.
Okay. I don't remember what I said. What was I saying?
I think you're talking about Wisconsin, the Stanford game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, tell me the percentage you give Wisconsin of beating Stanford, actually.
You know, given the fact that, you know, this is Barry Alvarez going to come out and coach this game, you know, there could be some emotional, you know, response to that. You know, Ball's going to be trying to have a big game because, I mean, this guy wants to go get paid after this. But Stanford's a really good football team. I don't think they have any doubt they're looking past this. I mean, they want to look through Wisconsin. I think it's going to be a close game, though, Tarvin. Both these teams are ground-and-pound type of teams, so this is not going to be a high-scoring game. You know, so I think Wisconsin has a shot, but I think this is going to be a fourth-quarter win for Stanford.
I don't know. I might pick Wisconsin to actually upset Stanford. They're playing some good football right now. The offensive line's gelling. But, again, you have to wait a long time before they play again. I mean, Stanford's a good football team, but I don't know if they're good enough to really, you know, beat their chest and act like they can beat even a Wisconsin team. But Sonia wants to talk about how the Big Leafs went from the Big Nothing. You know, Trey, have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a joke. I don't know if you guys watch the sport. Go on to the Sports Pickles website. They had an article about how the Big East was doing well on their deathbed, and they're close to family and all this stuff. I mean, just the Big East is completely a dying star. 7 other basketball teams leaving the conference. They were already being rated by they were basically the ACC's minor leagues, which is telling you something about the Big East, the fact that the ACC was ticking them off. So, you know, it's probably time for the Big East to fold and, you know, maybe come up with some sort of super conference or something like it seems to be other conferences are doing. I just don't see the Big East being – they're obviously not going to be a conference with a bid anymore for sure.
Well, I know a lot of their basketball teams, the non-football teams, are leaving. And I don't know, the Big East in basketball has always been great, so – it's going to be sad to see all of them go, but, I mean, the Big East in football, they're just terrible. I mean, it's not even worth mentioning almost, so I don't know. So, Trey, let's go to the Alabama-Notre Dame game real quick to see your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, I'm not going to pick this one just yet, but I got to tell you, I think this game is going to be very competitive, and I got to tell you, Tarvin, I think that Notre Dame has a shot here.
They do? Really?
I think so. I really do. There's a stat that the last two national championship games where the underdog was favored or not had a 10-point spread, They actually won. It was Ohio State, and I can't remember the other one was. So, you know, right now, I guess, you know, Alabama's a 9.5-point favorite. But, you know, just to, you know, you've seen it before in this game that crazy things happen, you know, when a big favorite. So, you know, I think Notre Dame's got a shot, Tarvin.
Well, I know one thing. Notre Dame's going to come in with a chip on their shoulder, you know, been hearing all the time how bad they're going to get beat by Alabama and the SEC. So I just want to see the game. You know, I just want to see what happens and see what Notre Dame can bring to the table. It could be close, but, you know, the way I see it in my mind, I don't think it will be. But, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if it was. But Notre Dame hasn't been here in so long. I just wonder how these players are going to, you know, perform on this stage. Alabama's been there, you know, two out of the last 3 years. They know how to win.
I mean, that's obviously a huge X factor is Alabama's, you know, Adrian McCarron, his experience in this game is just incredible. The fact of a quarterback who's played in multiple national championship games. So, you know, you got that going for Adrian McCarron, but, you know, and Alabama just has been there and done that. So, you know, Nick Saban's going to have these guys. They're not looking at hype at all, which is obviously Notre Dame, you know, buying into their own hype a little bit probably.
Sonia's cracking me up in the chat room. She said her meds are starting to kick in. Oh, man. But I look at this game, and A.J. McCarron is staying for his senior year. I mean, I don't know if you've heard that or we talked about it. We might have already talked about it. But how does Notre Dame score? That's the thing I don't see when I look at this game, when I break it down, Trey. I just can't envision Notre Dame scoring a lot of points. And Alabama, the way they run the football, I think Notre Dame's going to come in and try to stack the box. But will it work? And even if it does work, what about A.J. McCarron and those weapons? I mean, he proved last year against LSU he can make the big-time throws. So that's one thing I just don't see. I mean, how many points will Notre Dame have to win, Trey?
Well, I mean, I think this game's going to be pretty defensive. So, I mean, I don't think this is going to be a game that either team needs to score, you know, 40 points to win. But you know, Alabama's shown that, you know, quarterbacks can pass on them. So I think that Notre Dame's going to have to air this ball out to have any success against Alabama. And whether Golson does that or whether they have to bring in Reese in the second half as a sort of, you know, like he's been doing before as a closer, that's where their success is going to come if Notre Dame happens to have, you know, in the fourth quarter be winning this game.
All right, Trey. Well, Quinn is on the line. Quinn, sorry to put you on hold. What's going on, man?
Hey, I've got a couple things. On, I mean, the thing is with Golson is he keeps on getting, he's getting better and his confidence is more getting better and he's starting to read things better. I think I won't say too much about this game, but I think he could do all right, and I think he can make some plays happen with his feet. With the scrambling, and then along the lines of about Notre Dame getting blown out, and I think Notre Dame is looking at this and kind of using it as more motivation. But the thing about this team that's carried them through the whole season is Coach Kelly has said it. They just believe they can win every game, and that's what you need. I mean, if they come into a big game like this just believing you can win and you have it mentally in your head that I can win this game, that's kind of all you need to get you through a game and keep the game close, is if you believe you can win.
Yeah, you're right, Quinn. And, man, thanks for the call, bud. We're going to go to the next caller real quick. Sonia, what are your thoughts on this game real quick?
Hey, darling.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Hey, Trey.
Hey, Sonia.
He always says that with trepidation, like, hey, Sonia, what's she going to say? Okay, I just have to say this because we've been having some fun in the chat room. And Trey just said, he was like, better be careful, Sonia. Notre Dame's a good team. And what I said to him is, like, I know, Trey, I'm not smacking and I'm not saying that they're going to come in and just roll over or anything like that. But this is to a few of their, for some reason, a few Notre Dame fans have taken it upon themselves to be the rallying cry or whatever for other Notre Dame fans and on the boards. And sorry, but you do not come to a Bama fan when you just got a good season. And we are the defending national champs, have won two of the last three national championships, and tell us that you are going to blow us out, you are going to win. I'm just talking mad smack. And so you can't do anything but kind of giggle. And I said, baby, what you going to do, like pull Jesus down, and is he going to quarterback, and you going to put tail on defense? Or, I mean, what's going to go on? So it's just hilarious. I totally understand the confidence, and I love the fact that they believe in their teams. But I do think there are a few of their fans who are going a little they're not being realistic.
Yeah, I think you're right. I see a lot of them out there. And, I mean, let me tell you something, Sonia. The whole world right now is against Alabama, it looks like. There's a lot of other conferences and other teams smacking, getting on the Notre Dame bandwagon right now.
Oh, of course. Well, what else is new? That ain't nothing, honey. That ain't nothing new. We are so used to that. That is no problem. And it's actually some people, I give them the Notre Dame website. I'm like, look, if you're going to go be a bandwagon, at least learn to cheer. So go and, you know, do your studying. Get ready for January 7th. So I'm not, Bama's not worried about that. Whenever you're on top and whenever you're successful, you're always going to have somebody against you. That's no problem. But the reality is this is going to be a great game. Both teams are going to bring their A game. But in reality, if you look at the history and you look at Saban versus Kelly and you look at the time that it takes to prepare and you look at what Saban brings to the table and what Kelly brings to the table, there is nobody that can sit here and tell me that they're going to guarantee that Notre Dame is going to win. Not going to happen. No. It'll be a great game. We'll see what happens. But there is no way that Notre Dame is going to come in and just blow Alabama out. Alabama's not going to roll over.
Yeah. How are you going to guarantee a win over a conference that's won six national championships in a row?
Thank you. See, that's the part. That's why we don't even engage them. But it's like I said, it's funny because I totally see where they're coming from. You know, we were like that. When Bama was down for a while and we finally came back, we were very happy. But the thing is, we had current history to go on. And when you're talking to some of these Notre Dame fans, they're talking like, oh, no, we've been good for the past 10 years, and you just want to go, no, sweetie, y'all suck until this season. Okay, let's be real. Let's keep it real.
I think a lot of them are talking just because, you know, they are a little maybe insecure about this game because the nation is, you know, a lot of people are, you know, picking Bama and the SEC, but I just honestly can't see a close game. I know a lot of people, Sonia, including yourself and Trey and Quinn and even some Bama fans are saying this is going to be a very close game. I just can't see it, honestly. I just can't see it being close.
Well, I have to say that's my public persona. You have to – well, you know what you and I – what I say to you and Jason when I'm not on the air.
Yeah.
But I have to be politically, you know, correct and nice. And just, you know, I don't want any Notre Dame fans coming to TP my house and all sorts of stuff or saying Hail Marys and all this stuff.
Well, Sonia, I'm sure we're going to talk a lot more. You know, San Francisco just scored another touchdown on the Patriots. It's going to be 31-3, but I'm sure we're going to cover a lot more Alabama in the weeks to come, and we're going to break down all
the games. We will,
but
hold on before you say that. I have to say this because I'm mad.
What's up?
I am playing in the playoffs in my fantasy league, and Brady and the Patriots, I'm about to jump through this TV because I am not happy, so I'm going back to the chat room so I can just vent my anger there. You guys have a great evening.
Well, Sonia,
love you, Trey.
Sonia,
I'm sending you a cookie.
Hey, Sonia, are you winning or losing?
I don't want to say that right now. I was winning until this game came on. I'm losing right now, but I have two players that play tomorrow, so I still have a chance.
And this game sort of is the epitome of why you don't guarantee games. I mean, a game in New England with Bill Belichick as the head coach,
yep,
with Tom Brady as the quarterback, and they're getting beaten by a kid named Colin Kaepernick 31-3 at home in December. So
exactly,
it's a crazy sport.
You got it, exactly.
After New England just manhandled Houston last week and looked invincible. I thought no way San Fran could win this game.
Weather.
What did he say?
That's my Minnesota husband. He's saying weather. Wait, hold on.
Weather. It's freezing, it's raining, and it's very difficult to catch the ball.
So speaks the angry gopher.
Well, you know, Russ Walker has done pretty well in the past catching cold balls, but he's got zero catches today. So.
I'm sorry, Trey. What'd you just say?
Let's not make this into a thing, Sonia. It happened, okay?
Okay, here's reality. If it gets 2 degrees colder, it's freezing, so it's raining. The football is hard as a rock and slippery. I don't think Walker's going to hang on to the ball. A very difficult situation. All the touchdowns for San Francisco's are on juggled and missed balls and returns for touchdowns. It's all turnovers.
I swear my meds are kicking in. I love all
the balls. So, weather's playing a huge part in this game.
It definitely is. And Jason and Sonia, y'all be good. And thank y'all for the call. And we're going to break down some bowl games with Quinn, Jason, Sonia, Trey, in the weeks to come. Jonathan, whoever wants to come in and pitch in, we're going to have like a, you know, just like a panel. We're going to go through the bowl games and pick them. But that was a good cold balls, Trey. It seems like a lingerie football league here. Roger was calling it last night on the lingerie football league. He did a great job. Have you ever watched the lingerie football league, Trey?
I can't say that I have, but I did hear that a team folded in the lingerie football league before they even got started because of some sort of misconduct. So, sounds interesting to me, I guess.
Well, Roger is on blogtalkradio.com. He is, him and Sonny do the play-by-play for the lingerie football league. You know, it's kind of exciting to hear it go on. I didn't get to watch it, but Roger was very excited throughout the game, so.
I'm sure he was, and I'm sure it had nothing to do with the play on the field.
Exactly, right? He was just like, oh, that number six, what's her name?
I'm guessing he volunteered for that. He didn't get paid. He was like, no, I'll do that for free. But I'm going to need some sideline passes. I got to interview the girls before and after the game. I need their home numbers.
Exactly. Roger's a married man, but you know what? He loves his job doing that, and he probably pays them to do it, honestly.
Yeah, I'm just giving you a hard time.
Trey, before we go, I want to talk real quick on some college basketball. Yesterday, there was a couple of very good games out there. Butler beats Indiana, the number one team. My question, Trey, is I think Butler's lost maybe one game this season. Why are they not ranked? I looked at even with two losses, why are they not a ranked team? I mean, this coach that they have is probably one of the top in the country. I think Billy Donovan's right there with him. But tell me about this Butler team. How did they beat Indiana yesterday?
Well, I mean, Butler is historically a team that, for a mid-major, plays well beyond their means and their, you know, sometimes their abilities, and they're well coached. Butler's a team that we all know how far they went in the tournament a few years ago. So it's not like this team is out of nowhere. But this game was phenomenal, Tarvin. I mean, this game went into overtime. Butler was just playing outstanding basketball in this game. And I guess, let's be honest, I mean, Indiana is a really good basketball team. So, I mean, it didn't exactly surprise me that Butler won. But I was a little surprised to see Butler isn't ranked, Tarvin. I mean, I know they have two losses, but they really haven't played, in the Atlantic 10. They really haven't played a very good schedule so far. So, they didn't have that quality win that would help them out when it comes to rankings until now.
I would probably put them in the top 12 right now, just putting them, you know, beating the number one team the way they did. I mean, this coach, how long is he – I can't remember his name right now for some reason. It just slipped my mind. How long is he going to be at Butler? Because I really hear he loves Butler, and he's real loyal to him. But, I mean, really, Kansas, North Carolina comes calling. Is he going to stay at Butler?
You know, I mean, I don't know they're going to come calling, but, I mean, obviously, he's been at Butler a while, Tarvin.
I think they will. I mean, look at North Carolina right now. I mean, how long is he going to keep coaching there? I mean, I could easily see a big-time program getting this guy. He's proven. He's made the championship game like 2 years in a row before – And, I mean, he's proven. I mean, if he can win with the group and the recruiting he was doing, imagine you put him at North Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, somewhere where you can recruit the best of the best.
Yeah, and, you know, I said they'd have a signature win. I forgot that Butler beat North Carolina earlier in the year. So they've beaten Marquette, North Carolina. They lost to Illinois. So, yeah, Butler, surprisingly, I'm a little surprised, actually, they're not ranked after the North Carolina victory. I'd forgotten about that game.
Yeah, I mean, they've beaten some good teams, like you said. Who did they lose to?
They lost to Xavier, which is in conference, which was their first and only conference. That was on the road. They got beat pretty badly in that game. And then they lost to their loss was to Illinois.
Okay. Well, I mean, those are forgivable losses, and it's still early in the season. So speaking of teams struggling right now, Trey, Kentucky Wildcats, tell me, I mean, what's going on with them? Is it the loss of all their players, you know, to the NBA or what?
Well, I mean, I think people just expected all these freshmen to automatically play very well because they're highly touted. But, you know, it does, and not every player can come into college basketball and do very well and, you know, at some point, this whole turnover had to catch up with Kentucky, and we're just seeing it this year. I mean, we're seeing the fact that these guys just aren't ready to compete at the very highest levels of college basketball. I think they're still going to probably turn it around at some point and at least get into the tournament, but you know, right now they're obviously having a lot of adjustments to make, and they're not making them very well.
Yeah, I think the longer this season goes, the more these young kids play. Calipari is a phenomenal coach. I mean, he's a player's coach. They love the guy. He will teach them the game of basketball the way it's played at Kentucky, but it's up to them to learn it. I really think once the SEC schedule starts, and we know in basketball the SEC is not the best conference in basketball, so I think they'll get some wins under their belt, get some confidence going, be there in March, and you never know. I mean, these kids are the top in the country and for a reason. I mean, they're great athletes, but it's different when you're a freshman. I mean, Calipari's had the magic, you know, getting these guys to come in and win and then go right to the NBA. I just don't know if this team is that team. I don't think they have that identity figured out yet, what they're going to be. But if they do, I really see them at least making the Sweet 16 this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not buying into Kentucky that far. I think they're going to put it together a little bit better and make the tournament, but I don't see they're going to make, you know, right now, based on what I'm seeing, I don't know that they're going to go that far. But, I mean, it's possible. I mean, they have a great coach, and they have a lot of talent. It's just very young.
You're just a Kentucky hater, Trey. That's all there is to it.
Well,
another game.
The SEC is a little down this year is why I was saying. The SEC isn't as where it has been in the years past in basketball. There's only, what, three teams in the SEC ranked. So, I mean, you know, to me, when I'm looking at Kentucky and the SEC, I'm just not thinking that they're ready to compete on a level that you see Indiana and Duke. And to be honest, Michigan and Syracuse, those kind of teams right now who are really playing at a very high level.
Yeah. And last night, a great game. Two undefeated teams. You had number 5, Florida, 7-0. They were playing Arizona, number 8, 7-0. I mean, it was a great game. Arizona came back late, had a big run to come back and win this game at home, Trey. I mean, tell me about the home court advantage in college basketball. How huge is that?
I mean, big, big game for them for sure.
Yeah, I'm going to look for them to blast up in the polls a little bit. Tell me how far Indiana drops real quick before we go.
Well, I think they'll stay in the top 10 for sure. I mean, you look at the top 10. I mean, you know, the top 10 is not full of undefeated teams. So they're going to drop a little bit, I would say, probably at about number 6 or 7.
Yeah, I think they'll drop, 6 or 7 as well. I think Michigan and Duke will be number 1 and 2. I mean, Michigan looks very good this year in basketball. But Duke is playing so much better. You remember last year they lost in the first round, but it just looks like this Duke team has so much senior leadership on it this year. Duke's going to be a very tough team to beat. I mean, Krzyzewski has built this team. They're never one and done at Duke usually. So he keeps the players around at least 2 or 3 years. So these guys are good, Trey. I look for Duke to be a Final Four team again.
I think so. Duke is looking for real, and they're just destroying folks. So we'll have to see how they do in ACC play. But, I mean, right now you have to be very impressed with what they've done with their roster this year. I mean, losing Austin Rivers last year, you know, as a freshman, you kind of thought they'd take a little bit of a hit. But, I mean, they really have been on a rampage this year. I mean, just blowing folks out. So, you know, they beat Ohio State. That to me meant a lot. Ohio State's a very good basketball team. And to win that game by 5 points, I really thought, okay, this Duke team is going to be very good this year.
Yeah, and I'm glad to see UNLV ranked. I mean, it brings me back to the Tarkanian days, seeing Larry Johnson, Greg Anthony, all those guys. And just brings back good memories. But, Trey, we're going to be live Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, and we're going to be on Blog Talk Radio, and we're going to be on ntrmedia.com. So hopefully this was a great show tonight. I hope everyone enjoyed it. I hope all the new listeners, I hope you become fans of the show. We're going to love, you know, talking sports with you every week. And, Trey, any final things before we go, bud?
No, man, we hit everything tonight.
We hit a lot. 2 hours flew by. But thanks to everyone, all the regulars that came in. Love having you. So remember to follow us on Twitter at Weigh-In Sports and go to Facebook.com. Look for Weigh-In Sports, our group. Weigh-In Sports, join our message group, or you can like us on Facebook. We have our own page. So please look us up on that. Trey, the Twitter feed's growing. I mean, the Twitter account's growing a lot. It's fun. I'm starting to actually get into Twitter. You finally converted me to actually look at it. There's so much information on Twitter, especially a lot faster than ESPN or any of the other guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, man, stories break on Twitter way before you ever see them on ESPN, and a lot of these guys on ESPN actually get their news, you know, from the same sources that we get it on Twitter, especially some of this coaching moves. So, you know, follow us on Twitter, get your friends to follow us on Twitter, and, you know, we'll try to break these stories first and foremost.
Yep, and Roger on NDB Media, he has his show Sports Talk with the Guys on Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Great job by Roger every Saturday morning. Y'all guys go check him out. And just look up NDB Media and XL Sports Recruiting. Go to Facebook.com. He's in the chat room. Like his page as well. So, Trey, again, you've done a great job as a co-host talking sports with me, keeping me under control, man. I appreciate it. And have a great week, and we'll see you Wednesday night, sir.
All right, guys. See you.
Take care, bud.